Hello, everybody. This is your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, Dr. Diana Wiley. My guest this week is Sherry Winston. I almost said doctor because, you know, you would be a doctor. I mean, you are a medical professional, so we'll get to that. But we promised our listeners when Sherry was last on this program, March 27th, that we would talk about how to create and then play inside a conjoined erotic trance. Yeah. Sherry is the author of two fabulous books, wonderful books, informative books, Succulent Sexcraft and Women's Anatomy of Arousal. Welcome back to the program, Sherry. So glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me back. It is always such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Sherry. So we thought that for this show we might, did you get my recent email about possible overview?
I did.
Oh, and, good.
You know,
so I thought we would talk.
I'll go wherever you lead me.
I know. That's one reason you're one of my favorite guests, because you can talk about anything. But just to give, I want to tease the listeners a little bit, because we're going to talk about steps leading toward conjoined erotic trance. And that would start in the brain, as so many things do. And then we're going to talk about turn it on, turning it up, and erotic skills. Yeah, we've touched on some of these subjects before, Sherry, but not for a little while. So let's just jump back into it. So I'm going to reference mostly your Succulent Sexcraft book. And by the way, listeners, Sherry is an amazing teacher. If you haven't heard her before on this program, listen now. You'll see. And so if you want to call in with a question, the phone lines would be open, 888-874-4888. So, in your book, Succulent Sexcraft, this is a wonderful conjoined erotic trance. So, you have a definition of this in your book. You say the partners share the same level and depth of altered state. Their mirror neurons are firing, causing their biorhythms to match up. Heartbeats harmonize, brain oscillations correspond, and breathing synchronizes. All of those really exciting things are happening with this conjoined trance. Can you expand on that a little bit? And then we're going to back up and see how we can get to it.
Oh, yes. I mean, there's so many things to talk about to get us to the place where we understand that and what that is. But essentially, it's that magical place that we, I think, aspire to or dream of or have maybe in our fantasies about what sex is or what it can be, where it no longer matters who's doing what to who. Because
yes,
everything that's happening is turning you on equally. And mm-hmm. It's a very magical place. And we, you know, people have the experience of just serendipitously falling into that, or it happens when you first fall madly in love with somebody sometimes. But I think the key for people to understand is that we can learn how to get there. We can learn how to do what I call enhance our trance. And so we've got erotic skills that are learnable, and when we learn them, we can get to these amazing expanded erotic states and explore this whole other sexual universe that exists. But the key is that it's learnable, and that's, I think what we probably should maybe talk about first.
Let's do that. Let's talk about that first. Because you and I are older women. I'm older than you are, but we're older women. We have a lot of life experience. We're steeped in sexuality in terms of it's so much a part of our work and so on. So let's talk about how it is learnable.
Yeah, well, I think this is one of those foundational myths that we need to dispel in our culture, which is that your sexuality is just what it is. It's the hand you got dealt, and you're stuck with it. And I think the direct opposite is true, which is that we learn erotic skills the same way we can learn to speak another language, to play an instrument, to dance, whatever it is we want to learn. And in fact, sex is the same as all of those things. And so when I tell people what I do, I get very interesting reactions. But you could say people often fall into one of two camps. They're the people who are really interested. They're like, what's a holistic sexuality teacher? Tell me about that. I want to know.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's three camps. There's the people who immediately change the subject.
Yeah.
Yeah, funny weather we're having.
And
then there are the people who kind of scoff at it, who go, oh, that's silly. Sex is natural. Why would I need to go to classes or read books or learn about it? And I think that the fact is that just like learning to play an instrument, sex is both natural and learned. So we have our natural love of music. All babies love rhythm. All toddlers love music. Everybody has a natural love of music and an ability to be rhythmic and melodic. But whether we learn to play the piano or not, that's the learning piece.
And
sex is just like that. Part of it is natural. Part of it is our animal selves. And that part doesn't need a teacher. But we're human. And because we're human, we're the learning animals. And so unlike tigers, right, there's no tantra for tigers. There's no sex classes for animals, because they're just going to follow their innate choreography. But for humans, sex is about so much more than procreation. And so we have this enormous component of our sexuality that's learned, which means if we want to, we can learn how to do it better, how to become master musicians, how to really become an erotic virtuoso. And of course,
so
that's the choice that we have.
Yes, and this was a small study, but I think it's relevant to our conversation. And so this was a study surveying sex therapists, wondering if sex therapists had better sex than the rest of the population. Well, it turned out that we did. And that's because we can have sex without anxiety. We have confidence in what we know about. And like, you know, I'm sure your library is filled with books about sexuality. My library is. We're constantly learning more and more. So when you don't have that anxiety about not really knowing, then sex is likely to be more problematic. So knowledge is power, isn't it?
When you don't have it, yeah. Well, and I think also that there's something to be said for being in the field is just the understanding that basic concept of that it's learnable.
Mm-hmm.
And once anybody gets that, oh, this is something I can learn, something I can get better at, something I can practice and become more skilled with, that once you have that basic concept, then, you know, anyone can, even if whether it's anxiety or inexperience or a skill set you haven't practiced yet, it becomes easier to tackle that. We're like, oh, of course I'm at the early phase of learning. I don't know what I'm doing yet. That's okay. I've just started to play the piano. I feel awkward. No problem. I've made mistakes. Of course, that's how we learn, you know. So it reframes all of those things, the anxiety, awkwardness, mistakes, as part of the learning journey instead of I'm a failure or I'm bad at this.
And once again, even this is true for women learning to have orgasms, let's focus on the journey, not on the destination. Let's extract what we can from the journey and be thrilled by it or excited by it, right? The journey, not the destination.
Well, and I think that, in fact, what I tell women, and for years, decades now, who have not yet experienced orgasm, besides mm-hmm. it's learnable, or that it's not an assured path for them, is that, first of all, they're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you if you haven't had
yes.
that experience.
Yes.
It's totally learnable. Well, actually, two things I tell them. One is also that your solo sex is one of the best places to learn and to focus on arousal, not orgasm, to start with.
Yeah.
Learn how to expand your arousal and play with your arousal, and that will ultimately make it much easier to get to the orgasm destination if you really get into the journey.
Yes, and so there is a certain amount of mindfulness that is necessary for that, to be in the moment, and mm-hmm. you no doubt teach that. I do too. Well, I sometimes talk about it as taking Buddha to bed.
That's a great phrase.
Yeah, well, it's taking Buddha to bed, to be mindful. It helps with so many aspects of our lives, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing about the sexual learning, in fact,
mm-hmm.
is that this isn't just about sex. It's about everything. It's about life.
It's about everything.
About your relationship with yourself, with everybody else. And of course, if you are having pleasurable, satisfying sex, that also translates into feeling better about yourself, you know, feeling more confident, more comfortable with yourself, and, of course, more attractive, frankly.
Yeah, because I have found that with my female clients that women can relearn to appreciate their body and its capacity
mm-hmm.
for sensual pleasure, right? They can learn it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, it suggests, though, that women have to become more aware of their genital lubrication, their genitals in general. They have to be more in the moment and tune into their body. And I was right. And so when we talk about the brain, you say in your book, sex makes you stupid. and your book is wonderful because you have all these sex craft toolkit ideas. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of those, because these are great skills to have, tools in your toolkit, and
mm-hmm.
sounds and breaths are starting out. And then, and what does that do, Sherry? What does that do?
Well, I'll talk about the tools in a minute, but let me just even back up a second.
Okay, sure.
Back to the sex makes you stupid comment.
Yeah.
Which is that arousal is an altered state of consciousness.
Yes.
It's a trance state. And in order to get into that trance state, you kind of have to turn off the thinking part of your brain to turn on your body and your erotic nature.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the fact is, when you are in that arousal trance, your thinking brain isn't working very well, which is why being in a state of arousal is not conducive to having conversations about boundaries and safer sex and consent and so forth. So it's good to understand that. Also, once we understand that sexual arousal is an altered state of consciousness, then we can start looking at what can we do to enhance our trance. And that's where we get to playing with these toolkits that I talk about, our inner tools and skills that everyone has that we can utilize to enhance our trance. So things like breath, sound, movement, those are part of what I consider our body toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
We also have tools of the mind, which we've already talked about because we talked about mindfulness, awareness, and attention and focus and imagination. These are all tools of the mind that we can use. We also have tools of the heart, and those are our love skills. And like all the skills, we have a way of using those tools with just ourselves. So our self-love, our self-care, our self-nurturing, our courage, and ways that we can use them with partners. Breath, we can use breath when we're doing our own solo sex practice or play. We can use breath when we're with a partner. So all of the tools have multiple levels of using them. And there are also our spiritual tools for those people who relate to a spiritual context. How do we make the experience sacred? So those are our toolkits that we can use. And in fact, if we look at humans throughout time, people have naturally been using all of these tools to get into altered states of consciousness. We use chanting to get into a sacred state. We use breath to meditate. And on and on. So everything that we already do to get into altered states of consciousness can be applied to our sexual experience. Does that all make sense?
Absolutely. And you also talk in terms of your sex craft toolkit. And listeners, this book that Sherry has written, one of two books, but it's quite informative and amazing, Succulent Sex Craft. Sherry Winston, I'll write it up and so you can see it on the, it's pretty amazing, all of the things that we're capable of doing, and you say that in terms of the brain stuff, that the forebrain needs to turn off, so that your animal body can wake up and turn on. Mm-hmm. And then your command center needs to stop thinking, deciding, planning, worrying, and judging. It needs to go offline. And that's all of that is true also for a woman who's seeking an orgasm.
Well, because an orgasm is sort of the peak experience that happens within that altered state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, why focusing on arousal is often the key. Focus on getting into early arousal, shifting from your thinking brain to starting to go into a light trance. And then from there, you know, step by step, you can get deeper and deeper into your trance. And once you're deep into your trance, orgasm becomes a relatively easy thing to happen.
Mm-hmm. Because you have surrendered.
Exactly. And as you get deeper and deeper into your trance, your trance state takes over.
Mm-hmm.
And so the deeper you go in, the easier the surrender becomes. Often, I think what's the hardest part for a lot of people is early trance, is turning off your thinking brain and just starting to let go and go into trance. Sort of once we're in it, often it sort of takes over. But how do we get our brain to shut up and stop nagging and judging and, you know, criticizing?
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because I think a lot of people would like some tips on how do we shut off our thinking, our head,
mm-hmm.
thinking brain, and get into our bodies, which is the key to great sex. So how do we do that? I have some ideas, you have ideas, so let's talk about it.
So you want to move into light trance. That's that first stage of erotic trance. And light trance, you get there often by doing things that help you relax. We tend to think of arousal as getting excited, but deep arousal is actually a dance between excitement and relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is about relaxing. How do we relax, let go, float downstream, I believe it was. Right? How do we do that? And
right.
So some of the easiest ways to do that, first of all, is actually the set and setting, right? Creating an environment where you're not going to be distracted. So turning off your phones, not having your computers in front of you, having a place that feels comfortable, safe, private, warm, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So really creating that setting. And then the other part is your mindset. Really, I think the most important starting point is that mindset and that awareness of what's going on in your mind and that meditative ability to let things go.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of your very basic tools, which are things, I'd say breath and sound and movement are kind of often the key tools, but slowing your breath down, breathing deeper, breathing and being aware of where in your body the breath is going, using touch that's slow and rhythmic, movements that are slow and rhythmic are all some of the ways. And then sound, which I also think is one of those big keys. And the not the I'm about to have an orgasm sounds, but the
yes.
Right, those sorts of sounds. And so that's a great way to sort of start yourself moving into the trance with slowness and not speed.
Slowness, yes, and not speed, yes.
Yeah.
You know, so often I say to the couples that I see in counseling, two words, I say them quite often, actually. Slow down.
Slow down. Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah.
And then followed up by be in the moment. Now, sometimes that requires a little coaching, just like I'm sure it does for you, too. How do you become more mindful and in the moment? And how do you push away distracting thoughts? Because lots of women in particular have all these distracting thoughts. I guess it's known that women have a bigger corpus callosum, the connecting tissue between the right and left hemisphere of their brains, and so they're much more likely to multitask during sex. They're maybe listening for the baby to cry, and they're trying to be sexual, too. The problem is that a lot of women, long after their babies are young adults, are still doing that. They're multitasking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the ability to focus and to pay attention is tricky, but again, we can call on our tools. So if you find you're in your thinking and you're making grocery lists, I can call it, right? Or you're hearing the nagging, critical voice, oh, my gosh, my butt is so fat, you know, or
my breasts are sagging.
Whatever is going on up in there that's yak. A good first thing to do is to take some nice, deep, slow breaths with a gentle sound on the exhale. It's very helpful if you rock your hips or you pulse your pelvic floor muscles and envision the energy moving down into the center of your body. And if you do 5 or 10 of those, that often is enough to just get your brain to shut up at least for a minute or two, right? So that, you know, nice deep breath in, letting it out with a sound, pulsing, moving your pelvis a little bit. You know, 5 or 10 of those, and often you're starting to feel more in your body. Now, you can keep going with that. You don't need to stop after 5 or 10, and if you're with a partner, you can do that together. You can do that in synchrony. If you're by yourself, just really bring your focus entirely into yourself. And again, practice does not make perfect. There is no perfect. Let's say practice makes access. The more you practice, the easier it's going to be to have access to those states.
Yeah, no doubt. And you, one of the wonderful things about your book is that you give step-by-step instructions for how to do this. So what you just talked about, I'm looking now, well, it's on solo play, but a lot of women need to start with solo play before they can transfer some of these skills to partners. So on your page 277, you talk about turning it on, turning it up, and creating a conscious intention. And this is so good for low sexual desire, and I do want to talk about that because it's so common for so many women, especially, sometimes men, but usually women. So you have, with these conscious intentions, you say, I am practicing techniques for turning my arousal energy on and then up. I'm exploring my extraordinary pleasure potential. And I'm practicing self-love. That's so true, isn't it? Self-love.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about intention is it's one of our mind tools. And again, I really recommend solo sex as a great learning laboratory. You can practice these things with a partner as well, but whether you're partnered or not, the solo play is really where you're going to learn how to play your instrument. And that's what you're doing here. You're learning how to play your instrument. And by setting an intention, it helps give you that focus and the goal of what you want that to be. And now you can set any intention you want. Those are suggestions of intentions. You know, if you realize the thing that keeps blocking me is I can't turn my brain off. So my intention for this play session is going to be to practice those body skills and mind skills that help me turn my brain off and learn what I need to do to make that happen. Oh, I see. I need to have a clean and orderly space. Oh, I see. I need to turn the phone off. I need to have a lock on my bedroom door so the kids can't burst in. And then I see I need to I'm going to just practice skills with this session. I'm just going to practice making sound. I'm going to play with freeing and liberating my soundtrack of arousal. And you build skills. You start with simple skills. Then you start combining skills and layering skills. And it gets easier and easier, just like playing the piano. So that at first, while you might feel awkward and you're having to think about what you're doing, at some point it just becomes easy and natural and the music is flowing out your hands. And the thing with our erotic energy is that the more we access it, the easier it gets to access it. And so if you are dealing with low desire or arousal challenges or orgasm challenges, again, the more you practice without pressure, without expectation, just exploring and experimenting, the easier it's going to get. So I really, there's no substitute for practice. If you want to learn to play your instrument, got to practice.
Absolutely. And many years ago, I co-led two women's sexuality groups for actually 11 years. And all of these women had experienced some sexual trauma, sexual abuse, so on. And so we suggested solo play at home. I know you don't particularly like the word masturbation, so I'm not using that.
You can use it if you want. It's
okay, but anyway, we
friendly word and yeah. It has a lot of negative connotations. That's why
I know.
Solo sex.
I know.
Masturbation is fine too.
Yeah, but we suggested with homework assignments that they pleasure themselves and know how their bodies work first. And this almost always worked quite well because the woman really needs to tune into her own body, her own self first, and know what turns her on. And that'll also up her chances of having an orgasm with a partner, for sure. She knows her own body and maybe even what sex toy she likes.
Yeah, and I think also we've got this weird cultural expectation that our partners should know how to turn us on, and they don't. And generally what turns them on is not what turns us on. So it's often a very different skill set that we need, depending on our plumbing and our wiring. And the other piece of that is that in a great partnership, we're each other's teachers. And we're constantly learning and teaching each other. And so if you don't know, how are you going to teach your partner? And so we really need to know, and we need to learn how to play our own instrument before we get great at playing duets.
I love the way you put that, and it's very true. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about foreplay and why so many women really need more foreplay. I think that some of it is that women need more time for their minds to catch up with their bodies. And so they need more foreplay. You know, a man can see that they're aroused, they have an erection, but women are attuned to more, I don't know, the context as well as their beliefs and their attitudes about sexuality. And that's why all these years, none of the big pharma have been able to come up with a good so-called female Viagra. They just can't, because women are more complicated, and because for a lot of the time, what puts a woman in the mood has nothing to do with her genitals. Sparking a woman's desire requires engaging her mind and psyche as much as engorging her body parts. Isn't that true?
Absolutely, it's true. And you know, and there's multiple pieces to that too. I also teach and write about genitalia, particularly female genitalia, and most people do not know all the parts that women actually have and how they operate. So I think again, it behooves you to understand your instrument, all the parts it has, and also to understand the psyche and how to get turned on, or as I was calling it before, how to get into that deep erotic trance, and the things that can help us get there, the things that can block us from getting there. And the more you understand it, the more you explore it and experiment with it, the easier it becomes to know exactly what you need. So you know if what I really need right now is more genital stimulation, or I really need more whole body stimulation, not genital stimulation, or I really need more of the mind stuff to get going. So again, the more skilled we become, the more familiar we become, the easier it becomes to get into that erotic trance at all levels, the body level, the mind level, and, you know, ultimately I think the heart and the spirit as well.
Absolutely. And don't you think that this is not going to happen with casual hookup sex?
It's certainly less likely.
Likely.
I mean, anything's possible. If you have great communication skills. And
right.
You know your arousal, and you've created a fun and safe situation. You can have awesome casual sex. I think it's a lot less likely, in part because there's going to be more some more nervousness. But also a casual partner is less inclined, generally speaking, not always, but often less inclined to learn how to turn you on. And a long-term partner, generally speaking, right. is going to be more interested in learning what turns you on, what works for you, and in creating that communication that's so essential to good partner sex.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes with people that know each other, you know, the pleasure of all those non-penile touches, nibbles, kisses, insertions, and licks that will produce gasps, I suppose, and we hope orgasms, the more the better. It's just that they're not often a prelude to anything. They are the point. Because I think that all this foreplay stuff is, you know, call it what it is. It's sex. That's why I get my clients to use the word intercourse, because I think of sex as everything, not
exactly.
just intercourse.
I'm totally with you that the whole thing is, you know, if there's erotic energy to me, then it's sex as opposed mm-hmm. to penis and vagina intercourse, which is certainly something that can be on the menu if you have a penis and a vagina, if you have that equipment. But there's such a big menu of wonderful ways to play erotically beyond that. And again, I think it's useful to, I don't even call it foreplay because that makes it sound like it's the appetizer. It's all for play. It's all part of the erotic journey. So I think even that framing is not that useful for us. And I think also
the
time is really essential, you know, in getting out of that, I'm just doing this to get to that, as mm-hmm. opposed to really enjoying the whole journey. And also, again, the taking the time, because people, there was a study that the average amount of time couples in the U.S. engage in erotic activities from start to finish is about 12 minutes.
Oh, dear.
Now, let's have a moment of sadness about that. 12
I know that's not nearly enough, particularly for low-desire women, too, where arousal often needs to precede desire for her to get really turned on. Oh, 12 minutes.
Women,
what a shame.
Sure. I mean, most women, it's going to take them 30 to 45 minutes to get deep into the erotic trance and get their whole body and their genitals turned on and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say that in classes, I'll see women who are there with their male partners giving them the elbow, like, you see?
Mm-hmm.
It's all the time.
Yeah, women want their men to know this, that they do need more time to get turned on.
Everyone needs to know that this is what's normal and that it's not common for women to get turned on very, very quickly. It can happen. In fact, the more skilled you become with your erotic toolkit, the more likely it is and the easier it is to get turned on more quickly. But even with that, I would say, to really get deeply in the erotic trance, even with a high skill level, still takes more time than most people are giving it. And we want to make sure to go back to erotic trance, by the way. Remembering, we still need to talk about that a little more.
I know. So the steps leading toward erotic trance, conjoined erotic trance, we've talked some about it, the brain and turn it on, turning it up, and some of the erotic skills. What else? What else is necessary?
Well, I think also to understand that there's these different levels of trance, that we go into a light trance at the beginning of the journey, and light trance is similar to the trance state we might be in if we're watching a movie or driving a car and thinking about things. You know, we go in and out of light trance all the time if we're doodling or remembering or imagining what's going to happen tomorrow. Those are all light trance states. So that's where we start. And then if we continue on that journey, we can go into our medium trance, which is a different kind of brain waves going on, where we start losing track of what's going on around us and really focusing and being caught up in the experience, and then deep, deep trance. And deep trance is where those erotic experiences happen, where sometimes afterwards you come back and your head's hanging off the foot of the bed, and you're like, how did I get here?
Uh-huh.
I don't remember getting here, right? You
uh-huh.
get so
yes.
deep in your trance. And so those are these different levels of trance. And if we really want to get to the deep trance, in fact, one of the best ways to get there is to not try and imagine we're just like running up the stairs in one giant slope of light, medium, heavy, orgasm, we're done, but playing with deepening the trance and lightening the trance. So playing with going faster and then going slower, playing with getting hotter and getting cooler, playing with speeding it up and playing with slowing it down and playing with pausing and then playing with going slow and then going a little faster and then going really fast and then slowing it down again, so that we're really sort of dancing around. And the more we do that, the deeper we go into the trance experience.
When you say dancing around, I sometimes think that that lovemaking can be choreographed almost. Not that you, because if you're in a deep trance, you won't think about it being choreographed. But
mm-hmm.
but the dance is there, and the dance can be in flow. The dance can
mm-hmm.
really excite both people so much.
And where the
mind is in synchrony with the body, and
right, and everything becomes synchronized. In fact,
yes,
right,
yes.
And again, this is something we can learn to do by ourselves. We can go into a solo trance where it's just us, no one else, no distractions, nobody else to think about. And for a lot of people, that's the first erotic trance that we develop skill with, mastery of.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's partnered trance, where we go into a trance with another person present, and often that's sort of an experience of taking turns. I'll do some stuff that gets you really turned on, and then we'll turn the focus, we'll go to me, and then we'll do some stuff that's more focused on my arousal, and it kind of goes back and forth. And
mm-hmm.
that can be, you know, and just being able to go into your erotic trance with another person present
mm-hmm.
is another level of learning. And then what we started out talking about at the beginning is that conjoined trance, where
yes.
we're both in such a deep trance state, and our brains and our hearts and literally broadcast rhythms and waves that we can start to synchronize with. And so at a certain point where we're both in this trance together, particularly if we do things like breathing together, moving in rhythm, making sound together, we can get to that place where our brain waves are harmonizing, our heart rate, our breath, our heart waves, the energy waves of the heart, which are, by the way, a scientific fact, not some woo-woo thing. They start synchronizing. And that conjoined trance is one of the most amazing erotic experiences we can have, when we're just...
Yes. Merge.
It doesn't even matter anymore. Who's doing what?
There's a merging.
All turning everybody on.
Yeah. The merging, and I think some of this merging requires that the person is mature and differentiated. Lovely David Snarch term, although it existed before him, but he talked about if you're differentiated, then you don't have to be joined at the hip. In fact, sex will be better. Because
that's an interesting thing to think about. Because I think what happens when you go into that conjoined trance is you experience that sort of unified bliss, universal
mm-hmm.
unified bliss. And I think if you were not differentiated emotionally and in your relationship, that can be scary.
Sure, because you have fear.
Right, also can lead to feelings of erotic dependence on somebody else. If you think, I need my partner to get me to this state. So I think in a healthy relationship where you have good differentiation, it is actually easier to get there and less scary if you do.
And less scary.
That's amazing, yeah.
And then sort of what's underlying a lot of that is that the person perhaps has more self-confidence, has matured, has had more life experience. And so there you can embrace your sex life and not have all these fears about merging. You know, I remember years ago hearing a woman who had just become engaged saying, oh, we're like two hearts beating as one. Well, that's actually not very healthy in terms of differentiation. If you are,
right.
You don't want to be two hearts.
But what's so interesting
beating as one
is that when you're having awesome conjoined sex, that's actually what's happening.
Well, right, but you don't approach
that
it that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that to be the model of how the whole relationship is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, that's, again, we have these weird cultural models, right? The weird cultural models of, you know, like, you complete me, you're my other half, you know, all of those models, which are really unhealthy models of relationship.
It's true. And it's, I think it's one reason that a lot of relationships break up, particularly for people that are getting married in their 20s when they're less formed. Don't you think, you know, we don't know much about ourselves in our 20s. I'm speaking for myself, you know. So I encouraged both my children to wait till they were closer to 30 to get married because you know yourself better by then. And but there's so much more. There's so much more. It's very complicated, but I think the more mature you are and the more you feel confident, including, you know, sexual confidence kind of it aligns with self-confidence often, wouldn't you say?
I think it does, and I also think that it's easier when you've got more emotional maturity. Besides, it's everything in relationship is easier.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easier to have great sex with a partner because if you have emotional maturity, you're going to be in the learning journey together. You're not going to freak out when something doesn't work. You're going to be good teachers to each other about each other's pleasure. So I think all of those things require emotional maturity. Otherwise, what's happening, and I'm sure you see this with clients frequently, is people aren't communicating about what's really going on.
And the sex isn't
really working that great, but nobody knows why because they're not talking about it because they don't have the emotional maturity, they don't have the communication skills, they don't know how normal it is to have things to work out, right? This cultural model is like just sex. It should just happen. It should just be easy. And then if that's not the case, people think, oh, there's something wrong with me. Everybody else is having great sex instead of recognizing, oh, let's talk about this. This is what's going on. This is my anxiety. This is what's coming up for me. This is what would make it better. What can we try? You know, that sort of thing. So that's emotional maturity. And it is more likely to happen as we get older. Well, I have met some very emotionally mature younger people, so it's not, and it's emotionally immature older people.
Absolutely. It isn't necessarily a function of our chronological age, is it?
It's just not, no. Yeah. Although, again, it is more likely as we get older.
Yeah.
We get more confident, we get more skilled, you know. All of these are our life skills. So, you know, we can learn them and use them in the bedroom or wherever we're having sex, or we can learn them in the bedroom and apply them to other parts of our lives.
And
you know, knowing how
I
to
think,
how to be in a trance state, knowing how to relax,
yeah.
knowing how to increase your awareness or focus your attention. Again, these are all really useful life skills.
Not just in the bedroom, not just for sex,
mm-hmm.
but across
mm-hmm.
the board.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I have to just wait for the sirens to subside. It's now in Seattle. It's actually a little warmer, so I opened the window. But I am just down the street from a fire station, so I occasionally get the, you know. But you know, I sometimes reframe this. So we've got sirens, and I want to talk about in general. I often on this program, Love, Lust, and Laughter. I want to talk about the ability to have hot sex on occasion, right? And
oh yeah,
yeah, and. You know, I can't think of anybody that I'd rather talk to about this because you bring to this discussion many years of coaching and teaching and being in therapy with people. But you have these two books.
You know, I started out as a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I actually
I wanted you to talk about that. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is I started learning these skills, the bedroom skills we're talking about, unconsciously because I was teaching women childbirth classes and teaching them skills to use in their labor to have great births. So I was learning about and then teaching my women how to use breath and sound and positive visualizations
yes.
and how to get in their body and how to turn off their brain. I was doing all of that, and I didn't even realize that I was unconsciously using all of those skills to have better sex myself. I knew sex had gotten better, but I didn't actually recognize that was why. So it was literally 10 years that I was doing that, all through my 20s, before I recognized that
mm-hmm.
I was, in fact, teaching myself how to have amazing sex, at which point I decided, well, if this is how good it gets when I'm not even trying, where I'm not even consciously training myself, what would happen if I start doing it on purpose?
Uh-huh.
And that's when I started going to classes about sexuality, you know, tantra classes and Taoist sexuality classes, and started learning all of that stuff, which surprised me by being incredibly useful in my midwifery career. Everything I was learning about sex, I was bringing back to my birthing women. Because here's the thing. Labor is also an altered state of consciousness. And in fact, is almost
yes.
the exact same state as arousal. It also uses the same equipment, the same body parts, the same biochemistry, the same neural pathways. It's basically the same thing. So, and I also, by the way, have had women who had ecstatic orgasmic birth experiences.
I have read
not many,
that, and I'm not surprised.
Many,
yep.
Some, right? So that's when I started realizing, oh, these are skills. These are learnable skills. They apply to birth. They apply to sex. And we can learn how to make full use of them. And that's really, you know, where most of this stuff really started with was the world of birth.
We were talking, Sherry, we were talking off the air, and I was sharing that my something very personal, but that my own orgasm seemed to increase after I gave birth to my two children. And you said, well, you make connections after birth, inner connections, you know, and even with breathing, because I did all of that for the labor preparation. And then with breastfeeding, I breastfed both my kids for a year. And so those connections between the breasts and the genitals get enhanced because of your body is kind of learning. Can you expand on that?
Well, that's exactly what learning, embodied learning is. It's about making those connections and then establishing those pathways. And so the more we become aware of those connections, the more pathways we create, the easier it becomes. Mm-hmm. And really, a lot of this erotic skill building, sort of the way to become an erotic virtuoso is about creating those interconnected pathways. It's when you get to the point where you have an erotic experience of arousal or orgasm that just clicks. You're like, oh, I get it. And when I breathe like that and I do this with my pelvic floor muscles and I visualize this like orgasm just like happening, it does. And the more you do those kinds of things, the easier it all becomes. And so that's what we're doing. We're training ourselves. We're training our bodies. We're training our minds to find those connections and then, deeply establish them. And then it all gets easier. Yay.
Yay, for sure. So the way that I became acquainted with you, thank goodness, was in 2014. I heard you lecture at a conference in Monterey, California, and you focused on the anatomy, one of your books, Anatomy of a Woman, and so in that lecture, and I've been going to lectures forever, you talked about the vestibular bulbs under the labia. And ever since then, I've been, making copies of that drawing in your book and giving it to my clients. But also, it's just amazing. I mean, my husband, Brian, and I, he learned way back then, 2014. I think it was 2014. That
sounds about right.
Munching on labia and getting those vestibular bulbs.
Uh-oh. We're going to have to pick up talking about genitals
vestibular
on our next show.
Yep.
Okay, next show, genitals.
Thanks. Thanks, Sherry, so much. Bye-bye, everybody. Tune in next week. More to talk about. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.